Double Cross Radio. I am your host, Drew Lamb, and I am joined tonight by my co-host, Colby Olson and Chuck Horton. And our guest tonight is Julia Toriansky. Julia, also known as Brave the World, is a promoter of anti-state mentality. She makes videos, writes articles, and helps organize events such as Toronto's Liberty Now. Julia has close ties with the Ludwig von Mises Institute of Canada, where she is a contributor and volunteer. She's known to say that she's in a love affair with private property, the free market, non-aggression, self-ownership, and freedom. Oh, and her Bitcoin address ends with FU, which is quite telling. Julia, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
And it's a little bit late where you are. We're over here on the West Coast. We're in the Pacific Northwest in a place that we call Jefferson. We're trying to create our own country here, actually.
How's that going?
It's going pretty good. We almost pulled it off last month. We got 45% yes votes, so I think next time around we will actually create our sovereign nation state and pretty much restart government to the lowest possible denominator.
So, yes votes? Oh, no. Voting.
I know. What sucks about this whole thing is that, you know, what's an anarchist to do? You need a place where you're free of status, and so you end up compromising with minarchists.
Yes votes are just no votes in disguise.
Yes, exactly. Well, to start things off, I wanted to just get into some current event issues. I wanted to talk about Silk Road to kick things off. And I'm reminded of a quote from Nathan Frazier, who has a show called Live Free FM. And I'm just going to paraphrase it. If it weren't for the anarchists, who would build the Silk Roads? I suppose that's my first question for you. You just interviewed Lynn Ulbricht, who is Ross Ulbricht's mother. And Ross was the creator of the Silk Road. Excuse me?
Allegedly.
Okay, allegedly. there's somebody out there who is the Dread Pirate Roberts, and they have been part of operating the Silk Road, and Ross was kidnapped by the government, and they've thrown all sorts of charges at him, including attempting a murder for hire scheme.
That's been completely exposed as a setup and a lie. Even Forbes reported on that.
Excellent.
Yeah, they dropped the charges in all the five states except New York even before it was exposed. And I'm pretty sure New York, I don't know if it's been dropped now, but it really will be because they did the work on it and they found that it was fake.
So it seems, if I remember correctly, that when he was initially arrested, that's all they had on him at that point, were these trumped up charges.
Yep.
For murder for hire. And so they've thrown more stuff at him.
I don't know if that's all they had. Like, they were watching him for quite a while, I think, waiting for him to slip up. The murder for hire thing was basically to slander his name, to take away any kind of public support for him, and to paint him as a villain. And then, you know, after they did that, everybody went on about their business, and regular people forgot, and it was just us left trying to kind of make sense of everything.
Mm-hmm. So what are some of these other charges that they're bringing against him?
Money laundering is really the main one. Then conspiracy to hack or something, like, even just because his website sold parts that enabled hackers to hack better. Like, it's just so silly because it's liability, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Silk Road is being held liable for, you know, sale of drugs and for money laundering and for hacking and all of these charges. But that's like saying, you know, if you're watching child pornography, your internet provider is responsible for that and they should all go to jail. So it's just this jump in liability that's ludicrous. And if he loses this case, I think that's what they're going to do. They're going to pass liability laws that will hold anybody liable for anything. So then your service providers will spy on you. They'll have to spy on you and censor your internet use because they can't risk you doing anything even somewhat risky because they don't want to be held liable for your actions. So it's a huge infringement on our freedom. So that's one of the main reasons why this case is really important.
So this is kind of like a backdoor SOPA.
Oh, yeah. It's a foot in the door.
Yeah, it's just exactly what Aaron Schwartz was trying to
disguise. They have to disguise it.
Right. I mean, how can the state justify holding somebody responsible for activities on their website or network when actual crimes with victims occur on the state's roads and property all the time and no liability is attributed to the state?
Yeah, or a drunk driver hit me. A drunk driver hit me. They built the road that made the drunk driver accessible to my car. So
right,
it's just insane.
So the government official took the payoff to, you know, let the bid for the contract to build the road is responsible. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, it isn't like HSBC doesn't launder billions of dollars a month in drug money, and they never get a $1 million fine every once in a while. You know, money that they have to pay off to stay safe, but
that's something everyone quotes, right? They just got like $1 million fine. It's like, oh, okay, sorry.
Well, it's like a cost of doing business. You know, if you accept Visa cards, there's a 3% payment to the bank for that. And,
yeah. Well, it's an attack on Bitcoin as well. It's a huge attack on Bitcoin. And New York just passed its regulations, and thanks, Slosky.
What do you think of that? I mean, that's been heralded as a good thing. Even pro Bitcoin people have been saying, "Oh, the regulations are good. Bitcoin's legit."
Only the people who are getting time on the mainstream media are saying that. I just went to the Chicago conference.
Oh my God! How am I getting mainstream media fed to me?
Right. I met people there from, you know, I actually prejudged a lot of people. There's a lot of people from the foundation and a lot of business types, etc. But they're like, the ones that I met were really cool, like the ones sit on the board, and none of them want regulation. No, I mean, there was a panel that ended up talking about regulation, but none of the people that I liked were talking about it. Like Bruce Fenton fights against it. Even Brock Pierce, who people have villainized, he does not want regulation. And they were all, you know, I was around them talking business, etc. And like, well, New York is shooting itself in the foot. Nobody is going to stay in New York doing business with Bitcoin now. Everyone's going to move out. And there was one company that actually is staying, and they were basically laughing at them. Like, why? How are you? You know, how are you staying?
Well, I was Perry Ann there? I think I'm pronouncing her name right.
Yeah, I think so. Redhead?
She's one of the ones that's kind of advocating a little bit for industry regulation before the government jumps into regulation, which I don't really agree with either, but it's kind of like the movie industry used to regulate themselves.
I luckily just avoided any of that talk because I was in a good mood and I wanted to social. Oh. You know, some people left one of the panels because it just ended up being about regulation. They're like, oh, I can't sit and listen to it. I'm like, yep, glad I didn't go. So, yeah, that's the sad thing about, I was tweeting this last night actually about the New York Bitcoin regulations. Well, any Bitcoin regulation that passes really is they're gonna budge eventually. They're gonna take a step back and give us more freedom, and then everyone's gonna be like, "Yay! Thank you! Thanks so much!" But it's just gonna be pandering and thanking them for taking our rights away in the first place and giving them back a little bit later, and then we'll be happy with the minimal regulations that are set in place, which are still gonna be bad.
That's the way I see it. The regulation just costs everybody more money.
Yeah, and they could even just destroy Bitcoin. So,
oh, they can't.
we're jumping ahead a little bit here. Let's back up to Silk Road. I had a few more questions for you, and then we could get back to Bitcoin. If Ross is found guilty, what are the implications for the internet?
Right, so we talked about liability. We covered that. Another thing would be that they're trying to define everything as like taxable goods. Mm-hmm. So Bitcoin right now is kind of in a gray area in most places, right? So they're going to define it as something that's taxable. They're going to define barter as taxable. Mm-hmm. Like any exchange of value is going to be taxable. Because, right, like I can trade a chair for a cabbage and they can't tax that. They're literally trying to do...
Right, sure.
They're literally trying to find a way to tax everything. So it'll be on precious metals. It'll be in Bitcoin. It'll be on... there's a lot of these bartering websites popping up. It's going to be... that they're going to be hit. I'm sure of it. So it's just an expansion of the law in terms of what they can tax and what they can't. So liability, expansion of the law in terms of what they can tax. Privacy... Right? And that's going to be kind of an effect of the liability. Mm. Yeah, it all ties in. Money laundering. It's honestly, if he loses this case, this is going to be a really, really big step forward for the government.
Well, Chuck, what's the government's track record when they go after somebody like this?
I believe they win about 98% of the time.
Yeah.
They have their own kept juries, mm-hmm. that they can get anybody indicted on anything. They could get Santa Claus indicted for breaking and entering. I mean, these people will do whatever the prosecutors want. And then when they present the cases, they have judges that are handpicked that just won't allow evidence in a case if it's going to hurt the case of the government. So it's pretty tough. If it goes to trial, he doesn't have... Well, I'll pray for him. I'll put it that way.
They've made it very difficult for him already. They've done like ambush-style tactics, and they've done. He was supposed to work on his own case, and they wouldn't grant him the computer that he needed for months. And now there's time's running out. You know, they're playing all these kind of dirty tactics on him, and I think they know they don't have a sound case really. But that doesn't matter because they can just expand the law, the definition of law, and they've stated that. And what else did I want to say about it? Oh, something just flew out of my mind. Doesn't that happen sometimes?
Yeah, it happens to me all the time.
Yeah.
Just ask Drew. He has to feed me names all the time because I can't remember anybody's name.
I don't know how I come up with the names.
Yeah, I was going to say the best thing we can do right now is to fix his reputation because... If he's going to be martyrized, this is why they slandered him. They didn't want him to become a martyr for Bitcoin and internet privacy. So if we repaint his image as a positive one, which I really was trying to do with the help of InfoWars, Roger Ver did a really amazing campaign helping raise money, and he's got such a clean background and record, that him endorsing that says a lot. If we can repaint the image of Ulbricht, then he will become a martyr if they sentence him. And they pay attention to those things, because when you martyrize somebody, their job becomes a lot harder. So that's what we have to do, so that maybe they'll kind of, you know, not sentence him for life. That's my only hope for it.
In something we posted today on our Facebook page, it was actually it was from Liberty Me, which you interviewed Jeffrey Tucker a while back. And they interviewed you, I believe.
Yeah, that was a great one.
Well, he had something on there by Aaron Swartz, and I really loved Aaron Swartz. I'm really sad that he's no longer with us. But the quote at the end of the article was, "The tyrant dies and his rule is over. The martyr dies and his rule begins." And that was Soren Kierkegaard. And that is really true there. That's a true fact. That's exactly what they're worried about.
We know it. So, yeah, let's make him out to be who he really is. And I've spoken to his mother extensively, and he seems like literally the nicest person in the world. And I'm so happy that at least the slander has been admitted to be slander, right? And in fact, they should sue them for that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, they should. Unfortunately, a lot of government prosecutors, they get their promotions or their advancements by how many notches they can get on their gun holster or whatever. Nobody remembers whether it was an injustice or a justice is how many people did you put behind bars, and then they get advanced to their next position. So that's kind of sad. But we could do more activism. I mean, it's Aaron Swartz against all odds got SOPA stopped all by himself. So, you know, we can just start networking with more and more people that see that this is an injustice and continue to echo that charge out there. Maybe enough political pressure could be brought to bear that people start taking notice of you know, how bad a case this really is.
I hope so.
So do you know if Ross is related to Walter Ulbricht? Do you guys know who that is?
No, what?
this is weird, actually. Walter Ulbricht was the German politician who was the general secretary of East Germany's Socialist Unity Party from 53 to 71. And he was the chairman of the Council of the State from 60 to 73. And he actually ordered the building of the Berlin Wall in 61. So it's a weird coincidence.
So, maybe a common name in Germany. I don't know.
I don't know. I have some German heritage, but I have no idea.
Well, he would have. Sounds like he was straight far away from his alleged father.
Absolutely. Yeah. I've heard that there was a Silk Road 2.0 being rolled out. Do you know anything about that?
That popped up like 5 days after Silk Road shut down.
Yeah.
Now there's like more than 100 other Silk Roads.
Mm-hmm.
So what are they trying to do? They can't stop it. And they're decentralized now. They learn from the mistakes.
Yeah. Yeah, I had an account on Silk Road. I'd never purchased
Me
anything.
Too. Me too. That's how I heard of Bitcoin. I was like looking to buy things that I not name. And I'm like, Bitcoin, interesting. Should I buy that? And then like I would have, but then I felt sketched out sending said non-said things to my parents' house. So I opted out, but
I have to admit I've had some close calls. You know, I hadn't funded an account on there, so I didn't lose any Bitcoin. And when Mt. Gox went down, I had an account with them, but I didn't have any Bitcoin in that account. So I've dodged the bullet a few times, but you certainly have to be careful. But it's, you know, it's because it's unregulated, and you know, in the banking system, you know, if the banks were unregulated, banks would fail, you wouldn't have bailouts, you know, and people would risk their money.
People are so up in arms about Gox, but like failed, good. The next exchanges don't have an excuse now.
Right.
Yeah, they can learn from the mistakes. If you kept your bitcoins on an exchange, that's silly.
Yeah, exactly.
But I mean, this is an experiment in technology, so you have to kind of roll with the punches.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, when you were interviewing Jeffrey Tucker, he brought up something about some book somebody had written, or names are not good with me, but it was that things have a strength, an inner strength, and the more negative things that happen and they continue on shows how strong they really are. It actually builds their strength, and I think that's what's happening with Bitcoin. They've had a lot of negative things, and it just keeps rolling on. It's actually doing very well.
The book would have been The Rise and Fall of Society or something by Nicholas Taleb. I'm just looking up my notes right now on Tucker. If anybody wanted to check that out.
Yeah, that was, by the way, you guys should go to her YouTube channel and watch that interview. It was a fabulous interview. Jeffrey Tucker.
Is that a pulled pork sandwich?
Yeah.
Can I pay for that in Bitcoin? No. At a Bitcoin conference, I can't.
Yes. I don't know how anybody can interview him and not just be uplifted. He's just crazy. I got to finally meet him at Freedom Fest in Las Vegas, and he's just as good in person as he is on the YouTube videos. He's just an amazing man.
All weekend in Chicago, he's the best.
Yeah, he came up to Jeff Berwick at a break and at the smoking hole, and he said, "I love it when you're on my panels. It makes me seem so moderate." They just cracked everybody up. So
they're both great.
They are. I'll let Drew get back to asking questions. I'm sorry.
are you aware of any other cool sites that are accessible through Tor that maybe we should check out?
There's a whole list. Like, I remember seeing a whole list of these kind of secondary Silk Roads, and I actually have been trying to find it again because I didn't bookmark it, but it's like burned in my mind. And once I get a little more time, I will go and explore. I've been so busy with my Declaration of Bitcoin's Independence project, like literally just day and night. So I don't know. I'm in the same boat as you. I need to get back into it.
Yeah. I agree. I actually need to download Tor on the computer I'm on right here.
Actually, my other one. Drew, I think our Bulgarian correspondent, Maya, I think she knows all about this stuff. I'll write her a note and see if she can fill in.
You can message me after and clue me in so I don't have to find that darn list.
Okay.
So tell us about your Bitcoin Declaration of Independence project.
Oh my God, it's going to be amazing. It's basically done. I wrote the Declaration of Bitcoin's Independence after I made the basic Bitcoin Bitches video because I just wanted to do something that has more essence and it's more serious. So I wrote that and Bitcoin Magazine published it and got some really good feedback. And then I was out with my friend and I wanted to do a video for it, but I didn't want to be like, just reading it and be talking head in front of the camera. I'm like, what am I going to do? I'm going to do like B-roll shots of like beautiful places, blah, blah, blah. What am I going to do? So then I got her. She's into Bitcoin. Her name's Victoria Van Eyck. She writes for Bitcoin Magazine, a bunch of CoinDesk. She writes for like all of them. And I got her to say one of the lines. And then I was like, that's what I'm going to do. I know these people in the Liberty movement, and then maybe along the way I can get to like some other people in the Bitcoin movement and more anarchists, and I know Amir, so he'll be part of it for sure. And I was going on a big Euro trip for just to do that and to do Bilderberg. So it was always in the back of my mind. And then I went and I saw Amir at the squad in Barcelona, and I got him to do some lines. And like, I just, the more people I got, it just snowballed and it was just coming together so well. And then the more I did it and the more word got out, and I got all these people like really wanting to be part of it. And at Freedom, at Pork Fest, I got Patrick Byrne to be in it. He's Overstock.com. He's the first big company to adopt Bitcoin, mm-hmm. and it gave Bitcoin a big boost. And he's a he's a, I think, PhD in like philosophy and proponent of liberty and freedom. And he's really, he's the most hated man on Wall Street, and he's very hard to get to. And he goes into like an armored vehicle after he's done his speech. And I, Jeffrey helped me, and my friend Blake helped me to just, so he knows I'm not someone random. And I just like fed him a line from the Declaration. He's like, "Who are you? Why haven't I met you before? This is great. I'll definitely be part of it." And I'm just like, ah! So that was great. And it just, you know, everybody, literally everyone is in this video. Everybody that believes in freedom, everybody that believes that Bitcoin will help freedom, everybody who's excited about the technology in a way that's bigger than just investing, right? Everybody is in it. And it comes together in this beautiful kind of declaration of, well, independence, but a declaration of freedom. And it's like we're declaring that we're this is a way out. So I'm going to be in the Max Kaiser show on the 14th, August 14th, promoting it, and it'll be coming out August 13th. And same with, there's a lot of good bloopers. So I hope, I'm so excited for it. I think people will get a kick out of it. It shows everyone's personality. And the best thing about it is the Bitcoin community came together in such a beautiful way to work on a project or to participate in a project that some random girl's making. And it just shows that people do have the right, their heart in the right place. And that just, God, I'm so happy.
Yeah, Max Kaiser, that'll put you at like rock star status.
Oh,
he's got a lot of followers.
Yeah, I mean, that's big. Well, yeah, RT.
His wife Stacy's wonderful, and they're both in the video as well. They did a wonderful job.
Well, I'm going to give you some applause here for something I really appreciate. And as your, I think it was your first YouTube video, the one, the Seek Truth.
Seekers of Truth, Speakers of Truth, right?
Yeah,
and
if anybody out there in the audience, if you haven't seen this, you need to go watch it. This is genius, and I'm not just saying that to say it. It's a lot of work to get all these clips, to edit them, put them together, and to make something coherent out of it. But you not only did that, but you also put it into a storyline. It told a story through the whole thing, and it's not just like 5 minutes. This is 20-some-odd minutes. This is an amazing piece of work. I was entranced.
How do you say that? I'm so happy because nobody knows about that video.
It's genius.
That video took me the longest to make out of any of them because exactly what you said. Like, it was so, such a pain. But it
must have taken months to do.
Oh, it took forever. It took forever.
But just putting those clips in would have been hard, but to arrange them so that it actually moved, the storyline moved, and it all came to a focus and a point at the end. It was just incredible. I was just blown away.
Thank you so much. I should promote that one again on my, because I just have a bit more of ground.
That's a tragedy that doesn't have a million views. It really is. Everybody should watch that. Aaron Russo's in that.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's
a good one. It's all my favorite people.
There's an old TV clip of Ayn Rand. It's amazing. So I really appreciated that. I watched it again this morning to make sure I could, and I said, oh yeah, this is exactly how I remember it.
You know, it's a good video to show people who aren't like into this stuff because it shows all of these different individuals, and a lot of them are very learned, talking about the same things and from, you know, different perspectives.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's a great video to get people into this state of mind.
Now, I watched it right after I saw you interviewed by Jeff Berwick on the Anarchast. I went and I watched it, and I thought, wow, this is good. And then I just watched it again today, and I said, man, I should watch this more often. And I finally posted it on our site this morning.
Thank you.
It was really inspiring.
I have to say, I thought that when you interviewed Jeff, it was like one of the best interviews I've heard Jeff give. I think you really...
Tucker or Berwick?
Berwick, excuse me. I really
he said that was one of his worst interviews.
I know. I sent him a message just totally complimenting him. I'm like, this is of all of your interviews, and he's been on our show a few times, that was my favorite one.
Cool.
It starts off with the rap. That was great.
You're just, you know, throwing questions at him, and it was just fantastic. But he just seemed like really relaxed, and his thoughts were just really dialed in, and I thought it was just excellent. I thought it was brilliant. It was just a fantastic interview.
You only like it for the rap.
Yeah. Well, he always claimed that he was this, you know, like this really famous rapper in Canada, and I said, "Well, yeah, sure, but
yeah.
He's got some something to back it up. He got out there and he told us what he could do. It was pretty good.
He's full of surprises, that man.
Yeah.
Julia, what are your website addresses?
So, bravetheworld.com, and I actually I'm pre-selling some Bitcoin t-shirts to help fund the decoration, and they're really cool. It says, Bitcoin, the ghost outside the machine. So if you're interested, check that out, bravetheworld.com. My YouTube channel is, you know, YouTube.com/bravetheworld channel. I'm big on Twitter. Harass me at Brave the World, and Facebook Brave the World. I mean, it's all my website anyway. So, okay. I also Vine. those are interesting.
I'm throwing the links down in the chat here, and if anybody has some questions for Julia, the lines are open. She's just gonna be with us for
fun.
A few minutes here. The number is 1-718-717-8296. And you can call in, talk about Bitcoin, anarchy. Let's not talk about spaceships tonight.
Yeah. But I'll stick around because this is fun. Sometimes they tell people who are interviewing me that just in, like, so I have a way out. But no, this is fun. I'll stick around.
Yay! Oh, you're awesome. Well, just since no one else is stepping up and phoning in, you guys in chat, just get on the phone. You asked Jeffrey Tucker a question. I'm going to ask you the same question because I want to know how you would answer. This is really intriguing me. It says, is it possible for anarchists to organize?
Yeah, they do it all the time. Like I said, I spend some time with Amir Taki, one of the main team members of the Dark Wallet Project. And they live in a squat in Barcelona, an occupied police fortress. And just a bunch of random guys who are working the project. They organize themselves, didn't they? Right? And, you know, they have help from all over the world. They have Peter Todd in Toronto, actually. I had dinner with him like two nights ago. They have, you know, Cody Wilson in America. With the internet, anybody can get organized. I think 7-year-olds could organize themselves with the internet. So, I don't know. Silly question, really.
So I watched your stuff, like Bilderberg. What was your take on why that political affiliate stood out there for so long and answered all those questions and talked to you guys?
Naivete. I don't think he's invited to the top meetings. I think he's on the bottom of Bilderberg. And he's a liberal control freak optimist. I don't think he means poorly, but we all know that doesn't matter. And I think he was trying to gauge us for his own insight. And maybe that insight was with the intention of how to approach people like us, or just maybe his meetings at Bilderberg bored him a little bit that day.
Do you think Bilderberg matters? You know, as more and more people adopt the philosophy of voluntarism, don't the Bilderbergs become less and less relevant and powerful?
We have to remember we're a very, very, very small minority. And these people are deciding things like whether to implement the euro or not. So, yeah, it bloody matters, yeah.
Where do you think the tipping point is with the voluntarist movement?
Like, when we'll succeed?
Yeah. You know, like...
What a question.
I just say, I measure the success, within my own personal life, how, like my exchanges with people.
Right.
I did a deal the other day, and I sold some of my product, and I got paid with bottles of wine. It was excellent. You know, I consider that success. I like to talk about these successes because I want to encourage other people to start thinking along these terms and engaging in trade in different ways. Barter, trade, cryptocurrencies, ARMs, gold, silver, things like that. It doesn't have to be Bitcoin. There's all sorts of things. But it's some people think that we're reaching for some sort of utopia. And I don't think that we need that. We don't need a utopia as long as we're building networks amongst ourselves. And, and we reach out to other people that are like-minded, and then we start trading with each other. At what point do you think we could get to where we've condensated enough people of like mind that the state just becomes irrelevant?
With the Bitcoin technology, well, just cryptocurrencies in general, but with this idea, I think that's the only way we can move towards any kind of actualization of anarchy. And little steps. I notice people are becoming more and more liberty minded than ever before, but it's, I think it's going to happen in hubs. I don't think we're ever going to convert everybody, but it's about the question is, when are we going to be able to opt out? And I think with crypto, that's the only time we'll be able to do it, because with cryptography, it's the only way into true privacy, and cryptocurrency plays a huge role in that. And I like to say, I'm actually going to be working on a series called Our Crypto Future, talking about crypto and anarchy. And this is what I was hoping to be its like little tagline. And this is not utopia. This is not a vision. This is not a system. This is not a solution. We'll leave all that to the dictators. This is an anti-system. This is decentralization. This is peer-to-peer. And hopefully this is peaceful efficiency. So that's my idea of the future, and we'll have to create it on our own, and we'll have to find a way not to be harassed by the government that will inevitably still exist at that point.
Peaceful efficiency, that's brilliant. I haven't heard that term. That's incredible. Did you make that up?
Well, I wrote that line. I don't know.
That's so amazing. I love it.
No one's made anything up for a long time, but I put it together.
Julia, were you born in Russia?
Yes.
And then your parents immigrated to Canada at what age for you?
Seven.
Okay. So your memories as a child of Russia probably aren't that complete. My wife was young when
I remember everything.
Oh, you okay?
Yeah.
Well, what was life like then? And you've been back to visit your relatives, I assume. Uh-huh. Do you see any changes? Is there improvement?
No, there's no improvement. It's just different. A little bit different. I'm glad I grew up in Russia, because at least their kids had like the freedom to roam free, and I grew up on a farm, so that's nice. And I mean, I moved to kind of a suburb of Toronto, so I can't imagine being a little kid growing up here. Is just concrete and controlled park areas. So I'm glad for that, but I'm so happy I'm here as an adult and as a teenager in Canada, because there is opportunity here. And I mean, obviously Canada has big issues, but I do have a real choice of what to do with my life in many ways. In Russia, you really don't. It's a very different system. It's a system of bribery and mafias, and there's a lot of violence, and it's very dog-eat-dog. It's difficult. I would probably be married to some alcoholic and have three kids already. Like, it's, yeah.
Sounds like Poland.
It's not good. Yeah, it's not a good place.
Mm-hmm.
We were chatting earlier about leaders, you know, in this leaderless movement, and we were talking about Stefan Molyneux, you know, who I've watched hours and hours and hours of Stefan's videos, and I've listened to Free Domain Radio, and I've noticed a change with Steph in his message, and his message lately, it just seems that he's appeasing the system and saying to people, complain, but comply. And, you know, and he's telling people, you know, pay your taxes, but don't let it bother you. Don't let it tax your mind. Don't let it tax your spirit. And he's framing this as some kind of philosophical high ground. And his show, I mean, this is just my personal opinion, and you don't have to comment on this. I'll follow up with some other questions. But his show is just getting increasingly difficult to listen to. It, you know, when I was talking to you earlier today, I compared it to stumbling into the testicular cancer support group in the movie Fight Club, you know, with a bunch of grown men hugging each other and crying. And I don't really see how he's taking the movement forward through all of this. And I think maybe he has a long-term vision of, like, maybe in 40 years, you know, we will have stopped spankings to the point where the state goes away. And I really don't think that we have that much time. And so my question for you is, without leaders, who will build the roads to statelessness?
This is exactly why we shouldn't have leaders. Because leaders boil down to becoming nanny state figures for, it's like, if you have a leader in this movement that's worshipped, I don't see how that's different than being a statist, because you're taking everything, an entity of self, you know, self-proclaimed power is saying to you, and it's unhealthy no matter what the intention is or no matter what they call themselves. Mm-hmm. And I haven't listened to Stefan's show in about a year. I used to listen to it a lot. And I just found there was a lot of, it became too much about focusing on abuse and, like you said, kind of a self-help, weird self-feeding organism of pity and self-help.
Yeah.
And I've been to the picnics that he hosts, and you try to talk to somebody about politics, and all they can talk about is how their mommy never hugged them or their dad hit them once or something. Mm-hmm. I just find the whole thing a bit inappropriate. That's my opinion.
Yeah, but it gets uncomfortable, actually.
It gets uncomfortable, and Stefan is an amazing guy, and I know him personally, and he's done amazing things for the movement. He's woken up more people than anyone can count, like, and he has such a broad reach. And I'm worried that he's going to be isolating people with how the way that he's phrasing things now. Mm-hmm. I think he's going through a hard time right now, just from things I've been hearing. So, and it just shows nothing's totally objective. His life, his experience shapes his opinion just as much as anyone else. So it's silly to hold him up on a pedestal and say, oh, you know, objectivity and not arguing from emotion. Everything that he believes in is from emotion because it's happened to him. That's what a human being is. And anybody can try to be objective about things, but it's ultimately a complete farce. So to deny that is, I don't know, what, are you a god? You're still a human being. your opinions still are manifestations of the accumulation of your memories, which are emotion. Your memories are the things that are ingrained in your mind from emotion, not logic. So, yeah, that's all I have to say about that.
Well said.
I really hope that he gets back on track and does like some more really rational, put more anarchist videos, because
right, yeah, like the history of your enslavement, you know, that was
really
amazing,
totally awesome. I want to see more from Stefan. He's totally capable. He's brilliant. He's very good at what he does, mm-hmm. and I think he's going through a hard time, because usually when there's like a big shift in the way that you're delivering your message or the way that you're acting, something's happening in your personal life again, because we're emotional beings. Mm. So I think once he starts to get back on track, we'll it'll just tell us that his life is back in order.
Yeah.
I hope it's not a health issue.
Yeah, that has to be really difficult.
I think that definitely contributed to whatever's happening now, probably because of the cancer. That's a terrible thing to have to go through.
Yeah,
and it's,
I think he's trying to stay positive.
He subjected himself to the medical model that exists out there. I'm not sure that was the wisest choice. So,
yeah, I wish him the best, and I really hope to see better things come out of his wonderful platform that he's built up.
Yeah, I think I misspoke. That was the story of your enslavement.
Yeah, well, we know the video. It's
yes.
Freaking good. Yeah.
So yeah. I've probably seen it 24 times at least. Mm-hmm. Well, other than Stefan, who are the most influential people in the volunteerist movement?
In my opinion?
Yes.
Oh, God. Wow. I think Jeffrey Tucker is great, just because of his attitude. I don't see how anyone could not like him, and I think that approachability on a face of somebody who's an anarchist is wonderful. Berwick's good because he appeals to kind of the more entrepreneurial business types, and you know, you see he's legitimate and he's an anarchist, so that gives a good face. Who else? Oh, I hate this question because I'm going to leave someone out who's like totally like should be mentioned, and then I'm going to feel like an idiot in the middle of the night.
Julie, that's one of the advantages of being an old guy like me, is you can just claim that you couldn't think of their name. And it's totally plausible, see?
Oh, you know, that dude with the tie.
Yeah.
that other guy with the chihuahua.
Yeah.
So what is the best strategy to achieve statelessness? And there's so many different approaches. What we've been working on over here is the creation of the Jefferson Republic. We're trying to carve out a little place where we can exist and live free. And then you've got people like Jeff Berwick and Doug Casey, who are trying to they're trying to basically hack the system. You know, they're not ignoring it. They're not like me. You know, I engage in massive civil disobedience, but they're not doing that. They're hacking the system. Mm-hmm. So there's a few different approaches to achieve statelessness, and I'm always sizing up what I'm doing and looking at what other people are doing and trying to figure out what's going to be the most effective strategy.
I like hacking. Hacking the system. This is why I kind of dislike people who completely disengage, because they'll be like, oh, when are you going to move? Move to the blah, blah, blah. Like, that'd be nice, but I think I'm going to stay here and try to change minds around. You know, I'm not going to leave. I love my family, and I'm going to just move. But, I mean, that's a choice, but I think it's not good to be, like, in a petri dish of liberty. Like, it's good to have little nodes of that and to mm-hmm. connect. Right. Mm-hmm. Oh, and I thought of two other people that I do want to mention, if you don't mind. So Paul Joseph Watson of InfoWars, he's been great, and he's been very open-minded. I've been getting him.
Drew does a great impression of Paul Joseph Watson.
I know. Please. Paul Joseph Watson from InfoWars.com. I don't know. It kind of, that wasn't very good. It kind of starts to sound like Alfred Hitchcock after a while.
I'm going to tell him. But he's great. He did a big article about the Silk Road case and with my video, and he got Miss Holbrook on InfoWars, and it's like that really, I think, helps. And he really, like, he's, if anybody's objective, it's PJ Watson. He's very, very kind of, he's very comprehensive, and he's not totally unbiased. And he will cover issues that need covering. It doesn't matter who, blah, blah, blah. And InfoWars has made a lot of enemies, and even they help their enemies even, because if their enemies are aligned with their vision, it doesn't matter. They're all in it together. So I'd like to give InfoWars and PJ Watson and Alex Jones a shout out.
That's cool. We're friends of InfoWars. I've been on the Alex Jones show, and I've been on the nightly news. And but a lot of our listeners hate InfoWars, and I'm sure we're getting flamed in the chat right now. I wasn't paying attention, but that's okay.
You got to judge them on what they've done. They've done a lot of awesome stuff. Just like we're talking about Stefan, you still have to give people credit for the accomplishments they've, you know,
sure,
accomplished. And also Amir Taki and the whole Dark Wallet team, because these people, they're on a string budget. Like, Amir's homeless. Like, he runs around and squats and stuff, and he's actively promoting. He's not an anarchist. Like, he won't define himself, but he is an anarchist because he doesn't believe in anyone ruling over anybody. And he's the only person I know who lives his philosophy 100%. The guy doesn't have a bank account. Okay? The guy only uses cryptocurrency. The guy he refuses to pay into public transit. Like, that's why he got arrested.
Oh,
like,
yeah. I remember that video.
You know, and that's not because he's a thief or a hooligan.
Right.
Like, he refuses to use the only option that's given to him. Refuses.
Mm-hmm.
So, and he's been beat up by cops. He's been detained before. He has a really hard time flying. I've flown with him and traveled with him several times now. And every time they pick on him, even though I'm in the same exact position. But, you know, I'm a blonde chick and he's half Iranian and looks homeless. So they're going to pick on him because he looks like a vagabond. So kudos to those guys. And if you guys want to support the privacy of cryptocurrency, donate to Dark Wallet.
And where's the best website to go to do that?
Well, let me see what the ending bit of it is. Sure. I think they changed it recently. Yeah, they changed it recently. Yeah, so you can go to dark-wallet.net.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we want to talk to those guys on the air sometime if they want to do it. But I think this concept, it's the second generation of cryptocurrency that's going to make it the,
I don't know what that website was. There's
the next best thing or something.
Darkwallet.is. Yeah, sorry. I don't know, maybe that's like their sister website or something. Darkwallet.is. Okay?
Okay, so what do you think about Edward Snowden? Do you think he's for real?
Oh, is there a conspiracy theory now?
Yeah, I don't think he's for real.
Really?
No.
What do you think?
No, I think he's a total front. I think that instead of having posters that say Big Brother is watching you, they have videos of Ed Snowden saying Big Brother is watching you. That's my opinion.
He didn't say anything that the other previous whistleblowers hadn't already said.
Yeah, I don't think he's a hero at all. But I don't know anybody who agrees with me on that. So
I can't deny the impact he's had.
He's had a massive impact. But, you know, it's just, you know, what got me going on this was, you know, Jones was just all over hyping Snowden as this great hero, but I think he should be rejected. I think that when people are told that they're being watched and everything's being monitored and recorded and everything, they start altering their behavior. And even in the last video that I watched with Snowden, he was telling journalists to alter their behavior. He's actually saying it. And I found that extremely disturbing. He's trying to sound like he's your friend, but he's being very manipulative. I think that he is part of a huge psychological operation. And that's just my take.
The Panopticon. Are we being watched? Probably, maybe, yes. But you don't know when, so you alter your behavior just in case.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I just put out a meme saying, the state has become our God, because, like, God, who may or may not be watching us, the state has become the Panopticon. So, and the Panopticon is actually a style of prison that was developed in the 1800s by this French guy, and it's where you have a tower in the middle of the prison, and the prison cells are all around the tower, and the tower has a line of sight into every prison window, but the prison window can't see if they're being seen by the tower, so it's like a constant possible surveillance.
Right.
That's interesting.
Watch the latest video. It just really, really hit me after watching that. The interview is just so hyper-produced, and everybody had their hair styled and makeup, and the lighting was just right, and the hue was just right, and the colors everybody was wearing, and it felt like a propaganda piece to me. And I'm usually dead on this stuff. Have you seen it, Colby?
I've seen a couple of his interviews, but in a sense it's almost like, what will they put up with? If we tell them, if it was a setup per se, okay? So hypothetically, if Edward Snowden is completely a setup just to see how we'll react, we didn't really do too much.
Well, I'm going to sleep well tonight. Thanks for that.
I hope I didn't spoil anybody's viewpoint on it, on Ed Snowden. But
I'm always intrigued by any kind of revelations, if I can.
I don't know. Maybe I'll have to make a video, The Truth About Edward Snowden.
Yeah. It's one of those...
We have to stop with the truth about... Stop it, Paul.
The truth about the truth.
We're
drawing to the end of our hour here. And thank you so much, Julia, for staying on the entire time.
I'm going to steal that. My next video is going to be The Truth About the Truth.
And you can have it. It's not a steal. It's a gift.
It's amazing. Oh, my God. I love it so much.
And we've got to have you on again sometime, because I still want to find out about the Robin Hood of Spain. Those of you, go to her YouTube channel and listen to that interview. That's amazing.
Yeah, it's a good one. You got to listen hard. He's got a bit of an accent.
Yes, you got to focus.
Yeah.
But you're an amazing individual. You're doing great work, and you're incredibly wise for someone so young. And we're just really an honor for us to have you on the show. Thanks for coming.
Thank you so much. Have a very good night, all of you.
Thank you, Julia. Bye.
Definitely. I've got some catching up to do.
Okay, so next week, where's my schedule? Next week, we have the one and only Greg Askins. He's a local guy, and we're going to be talking about the FDA and aspartame and all sorts of things that make food less healthy. You know, there's a lot of foods that are approved for human consumption in the United States and nowhere else in the world. Now, that's what we're going to be talking about next week. And so make sure that you come back in and hear us here. And let's see, we can have just the music's going to start any second. Colby, you didn't get to say much today. You have a special coming up in 2 weeks. He's going to give a report on the VA. That's going to be awesome.
Yeah, I've got a lot of research left to do on that one right now. But I'm actually going to go out there and try to talk to one of my personal counselors out there and see if I can get a personal interview with him, and maybe we'll see if we can get him on the air even.
That would be awesome. So we also have a lot of really cool future shows lined up. We haven't got confirmations from everybody yet, but we are going to have, I think the week after Colby, we're going to have on Justin O'Connell from the Dollar Vigilante, and Elaine Diane Taylor, author of the Bitcoin Barbarian song, on, and that's going to be a great show too. So we'll see you the next few weeks on Thursday.